It is not only exhausting to create great works of art, it is also, for the viewer, exhausting to gaze upon a work and appreciate its immensity. We continue our conversation with Ariel Zuniga and Jack Rutberg. Good afternoon. My name is Stephen DeLuque, and along with Krissa Hewitt, we host this program, Ears on Art. Ears on Art is dedicated to the exploration and the advancement of the visual arts and is just one segment of Issues and Ideas, which is produced at the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio. KCBX serves the California Central Coast from Ventura to Salinas. Krissa and I are honored to once again visit with Jack Rutberg, the proprietor of Jack Rutberg Fine Arts, located at 357 North La Brea Avenue in Los Angeles. Jack is currently displaying works by Francisco Zuniga and Rico Lebron. As an added bonus, Francisco's son Ariel joins us to talk about growing up in his father's household and the many years he has spent cataloging and photographing his father's drawings, paintings, and sculptures. We now rejoin Ariel Zuniga and Jack Rutberg, and of course, Krissa Hewitt.
How many things he did, why he was always so busy, why he was always so desperate for more and more and more, is very difficult. I have been trying, that's why I have been writing a little more and more about his work, because I would love to discover that enigma, you know? And if I don't discover it, it doesn't matter much. The point is that this enigma allows me to define my relation with my father, because my relation as persons, as son and father, was not easy. He was a very quiet man, too busy, too passionate, but too busy into work. I don't think I became normal, but I am much more normal than I used to be. I was completely crazy. I was always doing everything and moving and going fast and discussing with him all sorts of things that sometimes he just like couldn't even argue because that was none of his interest, you know? And saying, why you're doing again the same woman and why you're doing again the same drawing and this. And then while we, last years, when we started going to Europe once a year, he was doing some sculptures in Carrara. So we were driving, we were crossing 2-3 countries. And right. And one fascinating part of that is when he stopped in a little small town and he said, well, here in this and that, there must be a sculpture by this and that. Wikipedia would be jealous of that. He knew everything about little details and small details. And then we could talk while driving in the car instead of going in the freeway, going by the small roads in France, in Italy, going to little towns and going to eat well and talk about art. And then all the things he was telling, not to explain me anything, because he didn't have to explain anything, but when he started to talk about a certain artist and why he liked it or why he didn't, or for example, when we came and we saw a new artist in an exhibition somewhere, and he said, yes, yes, look at it, go and make a tour, look at all these pieces. And then when we go back, I'll show you pieces that were done 200 years ago, and you will see where is the beginning of that, you know? Now, the point is, was it worth it? Was it really enriching enough to do this piece 200 years after? Or we better keep the piece from 2 years before? You know, it's just like, why am I going to do this wonderful form that looks like nature when the one in nature is absolutely perfect? You cannot. Many people think because they are human figures, they are trying to imitate nature. They had nothing to do with the human figure. Sometimes you would find so funny to compare the drawing of a model with the model herself. When you see the model, you say, oh, is that the model? I cannot imagine that. Even the drawings from my mother. When you see the drawings, sometimes I have to look again and I think because of this, because of that, because details, because the date, I think is a portrait of my mother. My mother was completely different. And at the same time, you recognize her. So this kind of contradiction in terms, well, that makes art. For me, it's the most important thing in the world. Whenever you feel bad, you just sit and work. Whatever art you do, that doesn't matter. You can be a photographer, or you can do some knitting. And it's you. You are there or you are not. Sometimes you go to a place, you see work of art by someone, and you don't see anything. You don't see anything that moves you. And sometimes you just see the work and you will remember it forever, even if you never know who did it. That makes art what it is.
Absolutely. Jack, do you have any thoughts here?
There are lots of thoughts. But I should say, though, that this exhibition, I want to speak a little bit about the exhibition itself, because I think it's a remarkable bringing together of the span of Zuniga's works. Not truly a retrospective, there's no attempt at that, but the exhibition includes the remarkable drawings of this artist, this sculptor, that when you look at these drawings, we see why Zuniga stands apart. I mean, there's a remarkable dignity in this body of work that is heroic, frankly. And we're living in an age where the words beauty and sublime are very much lacking in evidence. And one walks into this gallery, even for those that perhaps may not find this to be their aesthetic, you can't help but feel a sense of meditation, a sense of dignity, a sense of respect. And I am so heartened by the response of the great many people that have seen this Zuniga exhibition, because what it really shows is the breadth of this artist. We have here works on paper, these remarkable drawings. We have sculpture in wood, we have sculpture in stone, we have sculpture in bronze, monumental scale as well as a very small, intimate scale. And Zuniga does not need scale to assert his presence. One of the most remarkable works in the show is a very small wood sculpture that I would say is the equal of any great classic work of the Greeks or the Egyptians. These are heroic works, and I think that in this day and age, we are so desperate for works that assert a certain gravitas, but the sublime. Above all, beauty needs to re-enter our lives.
That's for sure. Ariel, do you know much about his art education? Is he totally self-taught? As Jack was just mentioning, there are three or four different mediums just in the sculpture alone, let alone the drawings.
My grandfather was a religious sculptor. He was doing figures of saints and Christs and virgins. The uncle of my grandfather was also doing some religious sculpture. So when my father started, he started working in the workshop of my grandfather. That is why I always say that the most interesting things to find in my father's work is what I call the attributes, because the difference between laic or normal art and religious art is religious art have to have attributes that tell who the figure is and what it represents. When you go to a church and you meet with the saint, you have to know who this saint is, and you do not know it because it has his name written, but by his attributes, you know? If you have a St. Cristobal or St. Christopher, you have the child in the shoulder because you know he's crossing the river and then is the saint of the drivers. Things like that. It's St. Anthony. You cannot confuse St. Anthony with St. Matthew. You cannot confuse a saint with another. So this learning of the attributes of a saint, of a religious figure, is something that he applied to what he did. He did not apply that in a systematic way or in a very concrete way. It was not even necessarily conscient on him, but he was applying it. So that is why I mentioned before, coming from the other side, line in a drawing is a language itself, because then you have the attribute from one side and then the expression of the line, what the line means itself. And that's when they try to copy it. Sometimes people ask me, how do you recognize that a piece is real or is not real? What they cannot do is to give to the line its expression. That is how you recognize Rico Le Brun real or not. It's the expression of the line as a language, completely separate of the subject, just as an emotion. You know, in fact, a drawing is controlled emotion. And it's controlled just because it has a frame. It cannot go beyond the size of the paper. Sometimes you have some drawings who go to the shore, who go to the side, like they were trying to escape from the frame. You know, they were trying to go out. You know, yes, it's most probably the case of here. The head of the woman is in the extreme of the paper. It's like he needed more paper to give him more space. But this missing space, it's part of the expression of the line.
Those subtleties of placement have always been something that fascinates me, and just the recognition that people say, well, there's nothing new under the sun. Mm-hmm. And then you recognize that that newness under the sun is just what you're talking about. It's that ability to say, no, it's over here.
Yeah.
It's over here just a little bit more.
Yeah.
How many figures have been drawn and painted? How many sunsets have been photographed? How many, whatever it is. But we're able to find ways in some of them that really get us because something else was subtly done.
Well, at the same time, in practical terms, that's what makes sometimes a visit to a museum so difficult. It seems easy. But why do we get so easily tired when we are in a museum? It's because in a museum you are in front of a real strong choice. So all of a sudden you are into an artist that has nothing to do with the next one. You get completely involved with that. You get very emotional in what you are looking. And then you move with no transition. You have almost no time to breathe. And then you go to another one. Then it's the end. You are just, you know, you're walking like a snake. You cannot even use your legs anymore. You feel so tired. And says, why? Well, it's because of this. Because you cannot say this is better like they do in other matters, you know? Like there is the good, the bad, the wrong, the right. No, here you have an artist that is as strong, as heavy, as intense as the other. Why should one be better than the other? Or why should one be more expensive than the other? Or no, that has nothing to do with that. That has to do with the pure emotion that is there. You have four different guys from the Renaissance that are still there alive in the back of their frame, you know, and they are so alive and they're transmitting you so much emotion that when you go outside, you need to sit. You need to rest because it's just, wow, I'd be back next day, but like maybe next week, you know? And that is absolutely real. I don't think I have ever met anybody that goes to a museum and pass by the museum like if nothing happens. There is a moment when they are trapped by something.
I'm really very glad to know why I get so tired in the museum. That really helps.
When we talk about these political systems that everybody is equal to, the only thing which equalizes human beings is art. When Rousseau told Picasso, well, you know, it's very important, you are the best artist in the modernity and I am the best artist in realism, or there's a story related to that that is absolutely wonderful because in a sense it's absolutely true. He was not better or worse than Picasso, he was just a different kind of emotion.
There's something that you're touching on here that I think is really interesting. The human figure has been drawn millions of times. Thousands of artists of consequence. You know, sitting here and looking at these drawings, yes, there are things that are uniquely Zúñiga, the indigenous figure, he's celebrating the indigenous woman, but when we take it to the nude figure, this is a subject that has been so overworked, in quotes, but you look at these drawings and you don't need a signature to understand the unique qualities of every distinctive artist. Real artists bring real invention to something that is absolutely real. We know these figures, these nude figures. There's no identification of place. There's no identification of wardrobe. These are just human beings. And yet, without even looking at a signature, they can only be by Francisco Zúñiga. And that, I think, we as lovers of art find the magic, the sense of discovery, the unique qualities of an artist, separate from everyone before them and everyone that follows. I think Ariel has really touched upon that, you know, the redundancy. We're not talking about something that has been overworked. We really are standing among works that are uniquely identifiable, and the experience is unique.
If you have just joined us, you are listening to Ears on Art, produced at the studios of KCBX Public Radio in San Luis Obispo, California. Our guests today are gallery owner Jack Rutberg and Ariel Zúñiga, son of renowned Mexican artist Francisco Zúñiga. Krissa Hewitt now continues with the conversation.
In terms of the documentation of this work, I know that there's one that's focused primarily on the sculpture.
Yes.
Okay, and then is this the second one that's coming out, or the third? Or?
We published in 1999, first volume, only about sculpture. In 2003, we published the second volume that has to do with all paintings, prints, and reproductions. Then in 2006, we published two volumes, 3 and 4, about drawings. Drawings in the first volume up to 1970, and then from 1971 on. Now, at this point, I have finished already a new edition of the volume 1, because there were many, many things that we had to change. There were pieces that we have never seen before. I was at the point to tell one of my friends when we came in that I have a picture of this particular piece here, which is a yellow onyx. So I have a photograph of my father working in it, but when it's not finished. I don't even know who took the picture. It was one of the pictures in the files. So when I was working on the Catalogue Raisonné, I knew because of that photograph, I knew this piece existed in brown onyx. So what I did is I recorded it, and I had to use the photograph of the plaster because I didn't have any image, and the one in the photograph was not finished, so I could not use it. So it is fantastic that now that I am almost ready to publish the new edition of the volume 1, now I am going to have images. And in that case are many other pieces. I have been finding pieces for over the years. So we have finished the volume 1. We are ready to print it. We're not going to do that soon, maybe by the end of the year. And then I'm working in volume 5, which are all the new drawings that we had not on record. But I receive around, maybe 50 emails, much more, but 50 emails with real information about things, you know, or people asking questions or people wanting to know if I have an idea of where is this piece or where is that piece. Even people who got upset about a drawing that was sold 10 years ago in an auction, and then they write me if by any chance I know who bought the drawing because they want to buy that drawing, and things like that that I cannot answer. But that gives me a lot of opinions from people. Most of them, I believe it is because we live in a very lonely society too. Most of them, what they need is to tell me what they think about the work. And believe it or not, the people who knows the less about art, who are the less involved in terms of connoisseurship, those people tell me the things the most surprising and fantastic. And most of the time, and it's all of a sudden you cannot avoid thinking that I'm very proud that this man did that. Sometimes my kids, when they were little, my daughter, I remember telling me, but what my granddad did in life? He didn't sleep, he didn't eat, he didn't have time. He was working and working and working. And then every time there is another drawer and another drawer, and there is another drawing. And Did he shave? Did he go to the restroom? Or, you know, the question a kid will ask you, it's just like, my God. And I say, well, I don't know. I only saw him working. I imagine he did, but I don't know. Maybe he was a robot or something, you know. It is, but it's fantastic because the people have reactions that most of the time they need to tell that to somebody. So now, since I'm always responding to all the emails, even if it's with a very small, short phrase, I have more and more people who contact me to communicate. You know, like I was saying, I'm going to see this Sunday drawing that I know is good, it's no problem, but I know this lady and her husband are going to be so happy. Because then you have all this other religious background that we don't talk enough about it and that, but is... Like if the art had to do with some kind of talent, extraordinary talent or genius, and it is like if that was going out by osmosis, and then I'm going to see the sun, I'm going to touch the sun. It's like if there was something in the continuation of that, and I just like say I have no talent at all, you know, I'm just another person who is just dealing with these emails and trying to put all this information together. But the people want to believe that there is something else, something sublime. As you were saying today, it doesn't mean that much, but at the same time, it's still there. Something so sublime in itself.
Ariel speaking about this connection, basically, this thing of being human. But I should point out something that I think Ariel will attest to, because he's had a great deal more experience with Zuniga's work than I have. And I've had decades of experience with Francisco Zuniga. But one of the characteristics that is unique to Francisco Zuniga when you do an exhibition is the need of the audience. It's unbelievable to me. And by the way, every artist has its own sort of profile of who is collecting them and their primary interest. But what I have mentioned to Ariel, and he's observed this as well here, is that the visitor always wants to come up to us and share their first encounter with Zuniga. Now, I don't remember my first Picasso, but I do remember the first Zuniga I ever saw. And there is something very unusual about the repetitive experience of people always wanting to share that first encounter. That's what I call a love affair. I mean, this is an amazing characteristic that I have not experienced with any other artist, and I show and have exhibited artists that I am passionate about. But this is a distinction about Zuniga, and I would dare say that your listening audience should probably examine their own recollections, and those that know Zuniga's work can probably identify their first encounter.
And those that do and those that don't need to know when they can come and see this exhibit.
The exhibit was supposed to close March 17th, however, this is too formidable to abbreviate so abruptly, and we can guarantee that the show will be up through the end of March and hopefully, possibly, into April as well. So we're trying to work our schedule in a manner, because how can you possibly take something this magnificent and take it off these walls?
It would be hard, and I've always admired the fact that you almost tease us with, get here before it closes, and then we get a whole another month.
Well,
been really good at finding those abilities to expand the horizon.
Yes, and I don't think this happens, well, I'm glad to hear that has to do with Zuniga too, but I think that has to do with art in general. You know, it's, I would easily remember any moment the first Jerome Witkin I saw. And then I didn't buy it because I didn't even ask or whatever, but when I asked, it was gone. But if one day it appears in the market, I know I'm going to do an effort or whatever I have to do, but I will get it, because that I have never forgotten that painting.
Right.
And it's not a question of one painting in particular, but it's... Well, that's why people talk so much about love. That's what an encounter is, you know? Sometimes you are with someone 10, 15, 20, 50 years afterwards, and it's probably not happening much. But there is something that happens once that is strong enough to stay there long time, and sometimes forever. Not always, but sometimes forever. And that's, you know...
Speaking of forever, and I'm not trying to get you to divulge some hidden hideout someplace, but storage of these works, I mean, there are quite a few that I'm assuming are not all the property of museums around the world.
Well, I still have a certain amount of pieces. I have some paintings, I have some drawings, I have some sculptures. I know, not all, but I know at least 10% of those will never go. While I'm alive, I will never sell them. I will never sell them. You know, I don't want to change the subject, but each one his foolishness and his passions. Normally, every year I come in February to Los Angeles because I am a fountain pen collector. In fact, I come here because I am in among a group of, let's say, maybe 300 people, but from which at least 100 of them are my friends. And then we spent 4 days talking and watching only pens. So it's completely crazy, but it's exactly the same thing. There is a pen that you love, that you get in touch with it, that you have it in your hand, you write with it, and you're never going to sell it. With pens, it's so particular. Pen collecting is completely different than any other collecting in the world because it's so strange. And so for me, it is absolutely fantastic because this is a kind of a contrast. I can at the same time let myself go, my pen collector, because there are many of them who are going to show me very, very rare pieces and they want me to buy them. Tomorrow I'm going to be cool enough to be looking and saying, wow, what a beautiful piece. Look at it and love it, but I cannot bring it home. You know? So for me, it's the same thing. When you love passionately things, you love them. There's no other way.
There is no other way. Well, Ariel, thank you so much.
My pleasure. It was really nice talking to you again. I always remember the first time when
Jerome Whitkin. So, yes. You know, Jack, you've brought some wonderful things to many of our lives. Well, thank you.
Well, it's my great pleasure. It's very fulfilling.
Co-host Krissa Hewitt and I would like to thank this month's guests, Ariel Zúñiga, son of internationally recognized Mexican artist Francisco Zúñiga, and gallery owner Jack Rutberg. The Jack Rutberg Gallery is currently displaying works by Francisco Zúñiga and painter Rico Lebrun. Although the exhibit was initially scheduled to run through March 17th, as Jack just mentioned, the exhibit has been extended. Visit the gallery's website at jackrutbergfinearts.com for further updates and future exhibits. The Jack Rutberg Fine Arts Gallery is located at 357 North La Brea Avenue, just off of Beverly, in Los Angeles. You have been listening to a segment of Issues and Ideas called Ears on Art, a show which is produced at the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio on California's Central Coast. I am Stephen DeLuque, and for co-host and co-producer Krissa Hewitt, we thank our listeners for their support. Join us next month for our 19th anniversary show, featuring snippets of our favorite interviews from past years.